there's basically five areas where we see artificial intelligence and machine learning providing the most value to marketers. So we can talk about that. But to give you just a specific example of machine learning for SEO, you can take any SEO tool and grab a bunch of your competitors' terms and pull them down and find out, you know, what's going on, where your competitors scoring well, where you scoring well. But you really need some kind of text mining or machine learning to throw all that data into and let it chew on that data. And then what you can get back is a list of, okay, here's the terms that you always rank at the top for that are also hard for your competitors to crack into. So now when you're creating content for the next 6 months, you can create stuff to defend that spot that you've got.
Thanks for pressing play. That voice you just heard is John Wall, host of the super popular Marketing Over Coffee podcast. And this is the first in a four-part series on legendary marketing on Christopher Lockhead, Follow Your Different, where we aspire to have real conversations that celebrate the people, ideas, and companies that have the courage to stand out. We're sponsored by our friends at Oracle NetSuite. Learn how to turbocharge the growth of your business today at netsuite.com/different. And while you're there, you'll be able to set up a free one-hour growth review with an expert in your industry, netsuite.com/different. And also want to point you to growwire.com. This is a great new place on the internet that features stories of innovation and growth for entrepreneurs. Check out growwire.com. All right. Our four-part series on legendary marketing, I'll take them in reverse. So the final will be with the legendary Rick Bennett, the one-man advertising atomic weapon for Oracle, Salesforce, and many others on how to do marketing that attacks like a pack of speed-crazed wolverines. Rick is a one-of-a-kind marketing weapon and a character, a master, and a wonderful guy. It's a great episode that I know you'll love. Before we get to Rick, we'll have Gina Bianchini, the founder and CEO of Mighty Networks, on the power of niche networks and the power of community to engage with your audience, your customers, in a way that wasn't ever possible before. And coming on the heels of this episode will be none other than Sangram Vajiri. He's the host of the super popular Flip Your Funnel podcast, and I think he's really emblematic of the new young guns in marketing who are doing some legendary work. And on this episode, to get the party started, one of the smartest guys in the marketing world, John Wall, host of the legendary Marketing Over Coffee podcast and the author of the brand new Marketing Over Coffee playbook. We dig into all things marketing. For more information and the key takeaways from this episode, go to lockhead.com for the show notes. And now, hey ho, let's go.
The people we're talking to, our sponsors want to get in front of them and talk to them, and there's no other way to do it. You know, you can't just be cold calling. You've got to have good content to get people attracted and to talk to you. And so, yeah, so you know, hopefully.
Yeah, and your audience is, I think this is probably true for a lot of podcast listeners, particularly of sort of dialogue style podcasts, is they are hard people to reach. You can't telemarket these people. Cold emails are illegal and ineffective generally. Nobody watches TV really. Nobody pays attention to banner ads, right? So if you want to get to sort of high-powered folks who are trying to better themselves and are interested in cool topics, I'm, you know, a bigot, of course, but like what else? It's podcasts. That's the fucking answer.
It is, because, you know, it squeezes into, they tend to be busy people, movers and shakers. And so they want something to do when they're exercising or when they're commuting or, you know, on the weekends doing the lawn, and they still want to learn. And yeah, that's, the podcast is the easiest way to get in front of them. You know, you better have one hell of a pitch if you think you're going to get them to watch your video or come to your site and read some white papers or stuff. But yeah, audio kind of fits right into the workflow for them.
Yeah. My buddy Chad Grills at The Mission says that podcasts are AR that really work?
Dude, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, because you're kind of building this full thing around. And it is amazing how it's so much more intimate than other mediums. You know, I mean, you are literally talking into somebody's ear and it's you right there personally doing it. And yeah, there's no substitute for that.
Well, and they are in your ear. Like they're in your ear.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like, I don't want to get weird or whatever, but like, you know, I'm a podcast super consumer and whatever podcast I'm like, you stuck them in you. Their voice is in your head.
It's right. And it's crazy too. It always, I mean, it doesn't freak me out, but it's so neat to be going to other places. And when you talk to somebody who follows the show, like you don't even have to bring them up to speed with what you've got going on. Like they know they're like, oh yeah, last week I heard you talking to this guy and you, it is a full on relationship. And I can see like actors would be freaked out because people think that they're a character there that they're not. But with podcasting, it is really you that you're putting out there. So they do know the real you.
That to me has been the trippiest part of this whole thing in a lot of ways, because when I meet somebody who got to know me through the podcast, the weirdest thing is I don't play a character on TV, right? So just like with Marketing Over Coffee, if you listen to the podcast, you get a pretty good sense of who the fuck John is, right, as a human being. And so when I meet people, and I'm curious how you deal with it. You've been doing this a lot longer than I have. But the truth is they do know you and you don't know them. Right?
Yeah, you've got nothing on them. But the one thing I can say is, like, I've never met anybody who's come up to me and says, you know, yeah, I love the show. I've listened forever. I've never met a person like that I didn't like or wasn't able to really get along with. You know, it's like if they like all the same stuff that we're into, it's pretty much assured that we're going to be able to have a great discussion.
That's kind of how I feel too. It's like, well, if you listen to two or three episodes a week of this fucking crazy conversation that I'm having now with the world, then we have to have some shit in common.
Yeah. And it's especially, you know, you mentioned this world, like the rest of all the other media we get is just such garbage compared to this stuff that, yeah, it's like you find a kindred spirit of somebody who's like, yeah, let's kind of cut through the baloney and get to, you know, what's real here.
Yeah. And I also, I don't know if you consume lots of different, well, you'll tell me, types of podcasts, but up until fairly recently, the vast majority of podcasts that I consumed were interview or dialogue podcasts, but essentially people talking. And just lately, I've started to get into true crime podcasts. And they're fucking great. And I had this really cool experience recently where I listened to, I want to say, I'm almost positive it's ABC News. They did a multi-part series called The Dropout on Elizabeth What's-Her-Face and Theranos. And I found the whole thing fascinating because it's literally the biggest scam in Silicon Valley history. And, you know, I read Carreyrou's book and it's a fascinating topic. A lot of very smart people got taken to the cleaners on this thing. And she, you know, did a lot of damage, you know, telling people false blood tests. Anyway, long story longer, John. So there's this awesomely produced, high production value, you know, 8 or 10 or 12 part series unpacking, you know, professional gal, host, narrator, you know, huge staff, the whole thing. And it's like listening to, you know, 60 Minutes or Dateline NBC or something like that. It's at that level of quality, but it's a podcast and it's fucking riveting and I loved it. Right after I'm sort of about 2/3 of the way through that, a friend of mine turned me on to another podcast called Canadian True Crime. And this is the exact opposite of The Dropout. It's one gal. That's it. She gets a little bit of help every once in a while, but it started as one gal who's just a true crime buff. She's actually Australian living in Canada. And she works like crazy And she doesn't have high production values, just spooky little music and shit every once in a while. Very modest sort of production. It's just her narrating. And every once in a while, she'll draw in an audio clip from something, but almost it's almost exclusively her. Anyway, long story longer, both podcasts as sort of true crime narrative podcasts are excellent. And this warms the cockles of my whiskey-stained heart, John. The Canadian true crime one is as compelling, as engaging, as thoughtful, as compelling as a consumer to me as the ABC one. And that, to me, is the power of podcasting. And I knew that was true in the world that you and I live in because we compete with NPR and anybody else, right? But I didn't, because I didn't consume those kinds of podcasts, I didn't really think about it much. But, oh, and here's the other part of the story. The Canadian True Crime Gal, I don't know if it's still the case, but for a very long time was the number one podcast in Canada.
Top of the charts, totally running it. Yeah, and it's so funny. The light bulb didn't come on for me until you started talking about this, which just kills me, is the fact that the dropout is actually, you've got two of the hottest segments. You've got the entrepreneur VC, you know, startup thing, but and it literally goes all the way to true crime, unfortunately. So you're covering both bases with that. Yeah, and it's funny. There was The Onion, I think, did an article saying that NPR, somebody was hiring serial killers so that they could get more unique content for to do more of these stories because there's just so much true crime stuff everywhere. Yeah, that space is just on fire, and it is. It's amazing. Well, you know, Serial was such a huge spark for the whole podcasting movement. And then S-Town, too. After that, I got into that cast. And
I don't know.
Yeah, it is.
Those ones didn't get me for some reason.
Oh, my God. Well, S-Town is the one that kills me because, I don't know. I mean, my gut was just, and, you know, as somebody who produced this stuff, is like, so this guy recorded like 4 years worth of stuff, spending thousands of dollars. And basically it never went anywhere, but he was still like, well, I got to just drop this whole load of stuff on the world.
Yeah, and see what happens.
Yeah. And it is, and it's an amazing, crazy story, but it's definitely not going to, you know, you're not going to make that into any kind of movie that anybody's going to be into because it just kind of never really resolved or had the big payout at the end that you're hoping for. And that's the, I don't know, that's kind of crazy high-end crime drama where you know, spend years and years digging into stuff and you just never get anywhere.
Yeah, I don't appreciate those podcasts. And actually, there's another podcast, true crime podcast, that I like called Case File. But my big complaint, and I'm actually going to write the guy and tell him, is his show notes suck. So I do not want to invest 2 hours in a true crime story only to find out we never find out who fucking did it.
The guy's still at large and nobody knows. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, maybe there are people who, you know, they just that's compelling and they want to hear that and great. But now with this guy and I love his podcast, but I hate his show notes because I got to Google the name of whoever it is and find out if the thing resolved before I fucking start listening because his show notes don't tell me. So you got to tell us what the fuck's up in the story. You don't have to tell us the whole story, but we got to know.
Yeah. You want to have something that's going to reach an ending one way or the other.
Now, speaking of show notes, how do you like that? As I scribble to your new book, you've written this new book here, The Marketing Over Coffee Playbook. Now with more wins and wrecks. I like the wrecks part, Legends and Losers, by John J. Wall. Right here, first edition in my hands. Congratulations, John.
Buy the book, right? That's the
your book. Way to go, buddy.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, we're excited to get that out. So this is the second book that I've done. But the big thing with this one was we just wanted to take and dig into the podcast. Because just like you're talking about here, where you kind of don't know what's going on, we have years worth of podcasts and you can't really get to that stuff, you know, unless you're going to read through all the show notes. There's no easy way to get to all the good stuff. And so that was the idea of this whole project, was to take over a year's worth of podcasts, get them all transcribed and put the thing into just bite-sized nuggets so people can just go through and read a few things on whatever topics they want to find out about. And, you know, there's always stuff in marketing and tech that's changing and moving. And so this book gives you a chance to kind of do a super shot of a year's worth of shows in one sitting.
So first of all, I think it's a great idea. Take the podcast, turn it into a book. Boom. You should do it every year. The other thing I love about what you've done in terms of how you've constructed the book you know, because I start to pay attention to things in ways I didn't before, right? So, for example, I love your table of contents. And the reason I love it, and I'm going to do better at this in the future with my own writing, is way detail on here. So I'm just looking by way of example. You have page 23, 24, 24, 25, and 26, all subnoted on chapter one. And so you have two subheads on page 24. So what I love about this, the reason I like this is I really think authors today have, you know, these kinds of books. We need to give people a table of contents that you can sort of skim through the table of contents and kind of get the book.
No, yeah, you totally nailed that. So Carol, my editor, I've worked with her for years, and she did a bunch of stuff at Marketing Sherpa and has done stuff, you know, publications for years. And that literally was the design of actually working backwards from, okay, we're going to give people the PDF of the table of contents. That's going to be one of the promo things that we throw out there so people can download this and get, you know, a real view into what the whole book is about. And then, yeah, the other part of that was we wanted to make it where you could just read three or four paragraphs and get something worth, you know, actionable rather than chapter after chapter of, you know, digging into stuff that, you know, could take you forever to get to the meat.
Yeah. And I think that's how we have to do it. And I think also for somebody who's, you know, ADHD and dyslexic and dysfunclia and all that, like I am, I also look, is there a chance I'm going to sit down, start on page one and get through to the end? I guess there's a chance. I do it every once in a while. Not often though. Right. I look through the table of contents and I go, oh fuck. Cardiac monitoring. Okay, why is he talking about that, right? Or whatever it is. And I go there and I start to pick it apart. And then when I fall in love with it, then I'm more deeply engaged. I don't know. I may be very different, but I do, you know, and there's some great subheads in here. Why Wikipedia is unhackable. That's fascinating. That's an interesting topic right there. and so that is the first piece. The second piece for me is, and I think this is incredibly smart. I would assume if your books are like mine, at least 50%, if not more, are consumed on the digital version, not the physical version. And so your book assumes your podcast and your book assumes access to the internet. So it's an extension of your podcast, or it's integrated with your podcast, or how do you think about that?
Yeah, it's in this day and age, like you've got to have the link to everything. You know, people want to be able to click through and get to the source material or to dig down deeper or whatever. So yeah, that's a big part of the Kindle version, you know, and is doing the editing for that to make sure that all those links are good and are driving to decent content. And then of course, on the backside, there is for yourself too, then you're able to track stuff if you want, you know, if you want to dig in to see what's hot and what's moving from the book, rather than Amazon having all the stats, you can finally backdoor some of that stuff and see what gets clicked through and what gets acted upon.
Yeah, it's all fascinating. And I love this idea. And I'm surprised how many authors today don't get this, is you build your book integrated with rest of digital world. Right?
Yeah, yeah. No, tie it and just make it one more piece in the whole pyramid and everything just keeps driving traffic back to the other parts of it.
Yes, yeah, we call it the multiplier effect. Everything multiplies the value of everything else. And it's assumed that you're going to do that. So I think it's very smart. Now, what are the couple things you really want people to take away from the playbook?
You know, I mean, the big message is for the existing listeners, if you like the podcast, you're going to like the book because you're, you know, it's the same, same format, same voices, same approach to learning and figuring out what's going on. The other thing is just, you know, email, social, SEO, artificial intelligence, virtual reality, pretty much anything that's been hot in the past year, that's topics that get touched upon and will give you the ability to dive in. And then there is in the back section too, we've got summaries of a bunch of the interviews that we've done too. So if you, you know, are into people like Simon Sinek, Seth Godin, Jay Bayer, people that are, you know, kind of touring and doing a lot of marketing stuff, you can get their messages quick and easy and get an idea for what their, you know, books and topics are all about without digging in too much.
Yeah, that's the other thing that's interesting about this book. You did it topic, and then you synthesized things around those topics from many episodes, and then you pulled out a few key folks and said, okay, well, here's the conversation. Here's the essence of the discussion. Whereas, you know, some people do this type stuff and they essentially do it as a set of edited transcripts per episode. And it's like, you know, cool shit we learned from Simon Sinek, which, you know, is also a fine way to do it. I don't know that there's a right answer or wrong answer, but I think your podcast is, I would call it practical, right? It's for practitioners. We're having a conversation about getting shit done in our job around marketing. And so maybe one week you're teaching me about SEO and next week you're teaching me about social. And then maybe next week you're doing something slightly more strategic, talking about category design by way of example. But it is a show that is for people who do marketing for a living and are grappling with topics that are strategic and tactical, and they're looking for practical insights from other practitioners who do shit. Yes?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we talk about educate and entertain, you know, which is the kind of the big goal. But the bottom line, like with any business podcast, if it doesn't save you time or it doesn't save you money, eventually you're going to give up on it. You know, you have to give people some value that they can take and put to work on the job. And yeah, and then that's kind of our special sauce, is that we're, you know, two geeks who have been doing this for a long time. And so we run into a lot of weird problems every day, and it just gives us an endless supply of stuff to talk about.
Yeah, except with my podcast, there's no practical value to any of it. I don't even...
Oh, no, you've got, it's funny too. And I got to say, I'm proud and happy to say that I was in the Legends and Losers timeframe, you know, before you pivoted and moved a little bit. But I totally see why you did it too, because I feel that every once in a while where I want to take something big that is more life-changing and has, you know, bigger impact than just what you're doing on the job. And yeah, I can see why, you know, once you kind of have your small cadre of fans, you can then branch out. And we just see this over and over again. All the marketing talking heads do this. You know, they kind of start with their niche, and 15, 25 years later, they're doing self-help books and selling millions of copies.
Well, yeah. And I just had this realization that when you're doing an episode on how to design a legendary death with one of the doctors, Dr. Shoshana Ullinger, who, you know, was one of the leaders of the Right to Die, or is one of the leaders in the Right to Die movement, and sort of rethinking end of life, et cetera, et cetera. You are far away from having a how do you optimize your SEO conversation.
Yeah, no, it doesn't get any bigger than that. You know, it's definitely you're leveling it up to and the true advice. And that's stuff that the whole world needs to know about and needs to think about in our world today.
The only guidepost I have is this person somebody who I think I can have a fascinating conversation with. And if anyone else agrees, then fucking A, but at least I got to talk to her.
Yeah, you get it. Well, and you had Ken Blanchard too, because I was checking that out. I mean, that it's insane how many books that guy has sold. He's been at the cornerstone of business forever.
Yeah, and the top Amazon 25 best-selling authors of all time, right next to like John Grisham and shit, right?
Yeah, no, it's insane.
Steve King and, I don't know, the apostles maybe. So, you know, there's so much in here. Let's maybe touch on a couple things. I always love to talk about direct marketing, and since I've become an author and a podcaster, have sort of re-realized the importance of email marketing and direct digital marketing. And so what are the couple points here on email and direct digital marketing that you think marketers get wrong that you wish they wouldn't?
Oh my God. You know, how many days do we have? There's so much stuff that people tend to botch. I have to say, one thing that has totally hit me as far as email, just this week, Google is talking about doing AMP for email. They're talking about creating their own protocol for email where, you know, email would be more interactive when you're on the Google platform. You know, you can click through and kind of do web page stuff on the message as it comes in. So that's a massive move that I haven't seen anything like in years, because to have one platform say, hey, we're going to kind of add some features to email that are our thing and you can come or go, that's a big chunk of something big that can really shake things up. It's going to be interesting to see how that all shakes out. But a lot of other stuff is just block and tackle. You know, you really want to make sure that your content is in your voice. And the biggest problem people make is they just continue to spray out content and don't pay any attention to what the list is doing and how bad it's getting. And everybody ends up in the same ghetto of, you know, their list has maybe a 20% open rate and less than that, even of a click rate. And they're just kind of spraying a lot of email around without, you know, giving any thought to maybe we should be cleaning this list up. And, you know, do we want to have try and level people up? So if they click on certain things, they actually get different content, take advantage of more of the automation and things like that. On the direct side,
people, even sophisticated marketers aren't doing some of that good email funnel HubSpot-y stuff.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's been a recurring theme forever. It's kind of the joke that when people were buying these marketing automation systems, they were like, well, can we have 12 tracks and can it have logic, you know, split logic and can it do all this stuff? And then the vendor comes back, you know, a year later and maybe they've got like one track with three emails in it and that's it. You know, nobody realizes that to build all the tracks and make that forks in a dozen directions just takes an insane amount of labor. You know, people think they're going to make their job easier by adding marketing automation technology. And the reality is it actually makes a ton more work for you.
Yeah.
Because to take advantage of the feature, you just need to, you know, continually be ramping up your ability to create unique stuff. I don't know. We always have thought that there was going to be kind of a massive shakeout, but it just seems that between all of the acquisitions in the space that, you know, features even come and go. You know, you kind of go with a vendor and next thing you know, 6 months later, you're, you know, using a different tool set. And then the problem is the churn at the company level too. You know, a lot of times the people that bought the thing, 6 months later, they've moved on to the next company or doing something else. And you know, you even see, we'll go in and do audits and we'll find tools that nobody even realizes that they're not being used. Like the accounting's gotten a check once a year for this thing and nobody even has the login. That's, you know, that's our new world, brave new world.
Yeah. Why are we paying for this, Sally?
Yeah. Nobody goes back. And it is a good model. You know, if it's $950 a year at a $100 million company, nobody's even going to notice that.
Yeah, exactly. So not to jump around, but why not? There's a big chunk in here about AI and machine learning from a marketer's point of view. And you say that the new SEO is machine learning. So what do you want marketers to understand about AI and machine learning?
Yeah, God, and it's so crazy. I mean, literally in the time it's taken to do the book, things have already changed so much. But yeah, machine learning for SEO is a huge opportunity. And we can do this in two steps. Like there's basically five areas where we see artificial intelligence and machine learning providing the most value to marketers. So we can talk about that. But to give you just a specific example of machine learning for SEO, you can take any SEO tool and grab a bunch of your competitors' terms and pull them down and find out, you know, what's going on, where your competitors scoring well, where are you scoring well. But you really need some kind of text mining or machine learning to throw all that data into and let it chew on that data. And then what you can get back is a list of, okay, here's the terms that you always rank at the top for that are also hard for your competitors to crack into. So now when you're creating content for the next 6 months, you can create stuff to defend that spot that you've got. And that's, my partners find that interesting. I'm a lot more excited about when you get the list back of, here's all the terms that are easy to pick off that your customers are scoring for. And if you do content on this, you're going to be able to steal all this stuff from them over the next, you know, 6 months. So, you know, without naming names, like I do know that if you were selling any kind of hotel rooms, you might want to jump on Miami Airport as a search, because for some reason, when you type in Miami Airport, no large hotel chain is interested in grabbing those terms, and those would be yours. And because of the SEO tools, you even know, you're like, that gets searched for 12,000 times a month. So you can ladder up and build your whole content calendar on what's going to be happening under certain terms and be able to identify where the money's at.
So I just want to make sure I fully understand what you're saying. So what you're advocating is we monitor and get data on search terms, and we triangulate who has content around those search terms, and we can essentially create a I'd call it a heat map, where there's some open space, where there's terms being searched and not a lot of content. And I could stack rank those in order of priority, and I could build a content calendar against that stack rank order of priority, and essentially end up owning all of this previously unowned real estate on the global international superweb. Is that what you just said?
Yeah, because the thing, it's a competitive advantage in that you can spend the money, you know, where you know it's going to work the most for you. Instead of just trying to grab terms across the board, you can focus on the stuff that you know is going to generate the most heat and traffic. And so, you know, that's kind of text mining is one of the five AI approaches. The fifth one that we always do last, because it's the most challenging, but which also fits into this, is to do predictive analysis, time series forecasting. You know, so now if you take that search data and you parse it down all the way down to the week over the past 3 years, you can then look going forward and saying, okay, it's, you know, the third week in June, we know that everybody's going to be searching for summer rentals on the beach. And you can actually even dial stuff up and down and say, okay, yeah, these 2 weeks are the heaviest search weeks, so we need to crank up the ads. But, you know, when October rolls around, we can shut these campaigns off even because we know they're not going to generate any heat. So yeah, that's another big chunk of the machine learning AI thing, is the predictive, to be able to look forward.
Yep. Very cool. And I love how you break this stuff down in here. There's so much to learn. And, you know, look, I don't know who else is creating this kind of a timely resource, candidly, across such a wide range of marketing topics.
Yeah, that's...
I think you were going to say something.
Well, I was, you know, that's, you know, like with any project, you kind of throw this out there and you have no idea how it's going to be accepted, because that is the challenge for us, which is like come up with something so fresh. And unfortunately, it seems like so much stuff these days, you know, people are looking for ways to cut corners and looking for cheap fixes and hacks. And, you know, to do something that's a lot more academic and in the trenches, it's definitely a ton of work. So yeah, we'll see how the world takes it, but it's definitely been great. And yeah, I think the people that, you know, if you're in the trenches, you're going to use this book. You know, you're going to find stuff in here that will help you day to day.
So it'd be dumb if I didn't ask you about social media marketing and the things you've learned and you want people to take away from the book as well, because there's a ton in here about it.
Oh yeah. Social has just been crazy. I mean, for the bigger trends, and we'd seen this coming and it's proven itself, is that so much of social has gone over to customer service. You know, people always thought it was all about marketing and selling more, but the reality is it's the best way to keep a track of your customers and see what's going on there. So there's been some shift away from that. But the other thing that's just been nuts is this whole Instagram explosion, you know, the influencer thing. In fact, talking about Dropout, the whole Fyre Festival thing, you know, these people who are getting, so you know, great. 200.
that whole thing was so great.
No, isn't it? You know, people getting 250 grand for an Instagram post. And yeah, and we did deep dive into
that. Just that being an influencer is now considered a job.
Is a thing.
Really makes me want to punch people in the face. And I think, John, I'm probably the only person on Instagram who doesn't list themselves as a public figure.
You're not on
Instagram's a fucking public figure.
Yeah, no, there's so much going on with that is just nuts. And if that's another thing. Another AI touch point is network graphing and clustering. You know, most people are going in and when they're doing the buy, they're like, okay, this Kardashian has X million followers, so we want to buy that. We're going to go sponsor some stuff with them. And then, of course, we've seen that these people that are in the top decile of Instagram users, they get no interaction. They post to these X millions and they get no comments or likes, really, because the stuff is just spraying out there. And it's down, you know, you go down to the midpoint or lower where these people are subject matter experts. And then the other thing that you watch for, you don't look at how many followers they have. You look at how many people are talking about them. That's the big thing. How many people are sharing what those people have wrote, or, you know, how many times are they getting referenced by others? That's where you find the real influencers, the people that can move the needle. But yeah, and it's definitely Wild West with the Instagram stuff. I was just reading an article today about a guy who built an entirely automated bot that would just scrape other people's pictures of New York City, repost them with attribution. So nobody's getting pissed about it, but it's literally just this engine of regurgitating stuff and then getting followers and mining them. And, you know, the whole thing is just this echo chamber that doesn't even need any human intervention. And that kind of stuff, you know, is just going to, you know, eventually that'll get shut off.
Hmm. So you don't think Instagram is going to allow those things to keep just re-swizzling content?
It's a tough, you know, because there's all these networks come up with this, and that's their dirty little secret, is that they want the traffic, they want the likes, and they want the engagement. So if real humans are engaging with automated content, they're actually okay with that because it's keeping the users plugged in and active. But what they do start to do is eventually they start throttling the organic reach so that and you know, you see this on Facebook where somebody who's got hundreds of thousands of followers, only like 2 to 5% of their audience actually sees what they post. Like, unless you actually pony up the cash to promote your posts.
Well, and that to me is the greatest social media swindle of all, right? Because there was a point in time, and I don't know if they ever explicitly said it, but there's certainly a lot of businesses that felt it, which is like, hey, you don't even need a website. Just set up a Facebook page. Get everybody to like your Facebook. You know, our local TV news station, every night when they turn on the fucking 6 o'clock news, and like us on Facebook. No, don't send people to Facebook. It's insane, right? The pages, the groups are different, but even with the groups, you know, you fucking post something to your Facebook group. These are people who held their hand up and said, yes, I want your marketing. And 98% of them never fucking see anything you post. And you spend all this time and money to get them to like your page. You know, and to me as a marketer, what I hear and all that is, hey, fuck all that. You know what I want you to like? Go to our website and subscribe there, right? Because it's the only way we can have a personal relationship. And the fact that we as marketers got duped into trying to accumulate followers on any of these fucking platforms where we have no ability to have it's like as a podcaster, Apple doesn't even tell us how many subscribers we have, never mind who the fuck they are. Right. There are fucking customers. Right.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
Won't even let us know. Right. Oh, yeah, anyway, yeah. But I digress.
No, you're dead on it, because it was that you totally hit it on the head. We used to joke about that. There was a time where people would say, you know, you really don't need a website. You know, your Facebook page can be your whole presence on the web. And it did create a whole new approach for us. We joke about frog boiling. We talk about frog boiling. People would always talk about, how do I get off of a freemium model? You know, it's like you're giving it away for free and then suddenly you're running out of money. What do you do? And the answer is, you do just what social media has done. You boil the frog. You just start introducing small charges here and there to the people way out on the far end. And yeah. And then next thing you know, 10 years later, everybody's having to pay for a subscription. There's nothing left for free, but people don't notice. You know, when you take away stuff in big chunks, you get user rebellion. But yeah, you just over time slowly start adding fees and tightening things down, and you can get away with it.
Now, I wanted to ask you, you recently had, and I think his first name is Brendan or Brandon. He wrote 1 million followers. What's that guy's name?
Yeah, Brendan Kane. Yeah, yeah. Brendan, that was just Kane.
You had him on very recently, yes?
Yeah, yeah. Just a couple of weeks ago. He had done some stuff with Taylor Swift, and was one that dropped on me this idea that even in Hollywood now, there's actors and actresses who get roles because they have such a big social following. Like, there may be an actor who actually is more the part, but the production houses will go with somebody who has 2 million followers because they know that that's, you know, people are going to go see that movie.
I didn't know that was happening in Hollywood. It has been the case in book publishing for a very long time. And I don't know the rock and roll business that well, but my understanding is in the music business, that's also the case. If a band or an artist doesn't have a meaningful social/YouTube following, they're probably not going to get signed. And I know when we did our deal with Harper for Play Bigger, you know, our social/digital presence and, you know, blogging for Fortune and CBS News and all the, you know, brands, it sounds like a very big deal, right? And they go, okay, so this person has your digital footprint and your quote unquote social proof does matter a tremendous amount today.
Yeah, that's, you know, again, you kind of show up with your own crowd, but you totally hit it with podcasting too. The challenge is, you know, you really have to work to activate them because it's the files are going through other networks and, you know, they download the files and there's limited feedback. So you really have to work to kind of keep that, those guys engaged or find other ways to get them so you don't lose them.
Yeah. Any other sort of big themes around social you want to shine a light on here, John?
You know, the big one was a lot with social is you just have to have some kind of automation. So many things now it's, you know, you need to be posting, you know, 6-7 times a day to kind of keep momentum going. You have to always be on there. You know, it's tough too, because that's kind of like the, if you want to make a machine out of it, the other side of it is more, it can still be a place where you get honest discussion and real followers to make it work. But yeah, I don't know, other stuff we've done with that, clustering is interesting. Like we look at that where you can take a whole, so here's how we basically just take back the curtain and show you how this works. So for a specific event, we'll go to a show and we don't even have to go to the event anymore. Like we'll see that the show has a tag. We'll go pull all the social around that tag and then go ahead and run that back through and do some clustering. So you can see who are the, what are the top topics? Like what is everybody talking about? And then who are the influencers that were at that event? Like who was everybody talking about and listening to at that event? And so from that, you can get a list of like, okay, here's the top 30 people that were at that show talking about it and getting action on their social channels. And so now you can just go engage these guys by sending them a, you know, $20 book instead of spending $5,000 and 10 people at the Javits Center or whatever. You know, you can get the same impact without having to do all the work.
So the ability to mine what is available on a public social web to one's own ends is getting better and better every day is what I think I just heard you say.
Yeah, absolutely. You can, you know, you can dig in and grab everything. That's just, so Adobe just had their summit last week. That's like their huge marketing thing. And we were really interested to look at, they recently acquired Marketo, the email guys. And so we were like, oh my God, is, you know, are they going to completely swallow Marketo and is that going to vanish? And it was interesting. At first I was blown away that the Adobe topics and tags were like 50 times more prevalent than the Marketo chatter. And so at first I was like, oh, this is it. It's all over. But the thing I hadn't accounted for was that the Adobe people were talking about Marketo. About 20 or 30% of the Adobe chatter was about Marketo. So it was, yeah, that was actually nice to report. I was concerned that the thing was going to get swallowed whole, but it's actually, you know, infused itself into their culture.
Interesting. This is also, there's an element of this that I don't know is being exploited enough, which is, you know, we continue down this path. It started really with banner ads, and then paid search took it to a whole other place. But where we have direct sort of spend and results or accountability in a way, of course, we never could, even with Nielsen ratings on TV or any of that stuff, right? So that line between I spend a dollar, what happens, is getting tighter and tighter, and we have more and more analytics we can do around it. And we can do the exact same thing with our competitors. And this is the part that I also wanted to talk to you about, because what you just described, we can now triangulate against what the bad guys are doing. So we can look at what's happening in our world and analyze what the trends are and who the thought leaders are and who's being talked about. Da, 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 da. We can analyze their own ROI and performance, if you will, in this new performance metric marketing world. But the thing, and we can find that white space that you described earlier, which is very, very cool shit. But the thing I don't see very many companies doing, actually, and I don't see very many companies doing that, but I don't see them going to the next level, which is, okay, let's monitor everything about our competitors, what they're doing that works, what they're doing that doesn't work, and use that as powerful data. Do you see that changing?
It's tough. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff that you can do on that. Now, especially on the search front, it's huge because those results are all there. The black hole that you've got is, you know, you can never see through into your competitors and see what their close rates are and what their success rates are in their programs. So that kind of gives you a you've got a blind spot there that you can't work around, because that's another thing that we see big internally is because you've got all your data, there's a lot of chatter about attribution, you know, this ability to look at stuff and say, okay, our, you know, webinar program brought in 40% of the business. And that's something, again, another machine learning application that's pretty cool, is to be able to take, you know, your entire 5 years worth of marketing data and then run those deals through. And because, you know, in the beginning, it was like people were just like, well, what's the source code? Like, where did that guy come in? Like, oh, he came from a trade show, or she came from this, you know, webinar. Like, where did that name came from? But then as time passed on, people realized that, like, well, sometimes they come in and then they just sit in the hopper for 4 years before anything happens to them. And what's the trigger? And now we have so much data that people want to track the whole customer journey. They're like, they want it. And you do see some people doing some neat stuff with this where they say, you know, okay, we know that these white papers, this is the stuff that people, if they're looking at this stuff, they're probably going to buy in 120 days. And if they're looking at the pricing pages and these stuff, they're going to buy within 30. And, you know, the folks that we're doing the demos with, like, we're engaged with them, those are moving. But the ability to run that then through and do more Markov chain analysis and some of these other things where you have the computer model crunching it, and it can actually tell you, like, which things can be pulled out. Like, they can look at it and say that, okay, so normally they kind of run through these 30 things, but if you miss checkpoint number 5, if they don't do that, like, those deals don't close. So that's a critical one that you have to do. And then the inverse is true too. You'll see that, like, well, this one shows up in 90% of the deals, but we've actually never seen it kill a deal if they miss it. So maybe we don't need to be spending so much money on that chunk of the thing. Doing your own attribution is huge. And I'm trying to think of a good example. There's Nacho Analytics as a company that specifically does, it's Nacho Analytics. It's your competitors. You tell them who you want to follow and they will give you the reports on, like, okay, here's what these guys are doing and what's working for them. And it depends on how black hat you want to go too. You know, if you wanted to have mystery shoppers pinging your customers, I think for B2B, that's a little bit insane, but for consumer, that's fantastic. You know, have people go buying your competitor stuff and gather data for you on what was the experience like and where did it break down and, you know, how do we compare to that and where does that all work? There's a ton of opportunities.
In B2B, at a minimum, you should mystery shop your competitors at a trade show. At a minimum.
Oh God, yeah. Trade show, definitely. Right. Trade show is like the wild free for all of.
Yeah. You may not want to put them through the whole paces of pretending to be somebody from PG&E who's going to fucking buy their carbodingulate or whatever.
Spend $16 million. Yeah, you got the guys exactly. Texting his take him VP as he's
order
there.
And then not return his calls.
On the 31st.
Yeah, exactly. Fuck your New Year's Eve right up. No, I'm not necessarily advocating that, but it's certainly, I always love to try to slide in, but, you know, normally ended up being recognized. So I always had people go over with different name tags or whatever and tell me what the fuck they're saying over there. What are they doing in the demo or whatever?
Donuts. Dreamforce, Domo had their demo. You had to, like, walk up onto this platform and then look down into the machine just so that, like, none of the neighboring booths could be sitting there, like, scoping out what their demo was like. I got to kick out of that.
Oh, that's so Josh James too, the founder of Domo. That's fucking great. Yeah, that's great marketing right there. All right. Any other key items you wanted to touch on, John? There's so much goodness in this book.
Oh, let me see. We've talked about, well, you know, driver analysis that we talked about. That's one of the other big ones. One thing with the book too that's funny is, so, and this is, everybody's talking about machine learning taking everybody's jobs. The transcripts, we ran them through AI first. We had an automated tool do the transcripts. And there's a whole chapter at the end of all the stuff that it screwed up and it calling us, what was it? Marketing over sheep and I'm John Longtime Christopher, you know, it just completely gets the names wrong. And we've got Chris's stripper names in there and a bunch of other, the AI did. Krista Previn was one. I saw that. That was a good one. Who else we had?
I was thinking of legally changing my name to Stormy Lockhead.
Chrysalis was one, a developer that had to become a marketing guy.
So, here's the thing about, you know, and my friend Jason DeFilippo, who's the co-host of the Grumpy Old Geeks podcast, you know, and do you listen by any chance?
No, I'll have to add that to the list to check that out.
It's outstanding. And he and his partner are always talking about what bullshit that, you know, AI is. There's no such thing as AI because every, to your point, every AI thing that we do requires a ton of human intervention before you. You couldn't just like AI that shit and publish it. No, it takes human beings to go through all this stuff. So like, yeah, kind of AI my ass, you know. I'm summarizing their point of view, but I think.
No, it's totally true. In fact, other people have vented on that, you know, basically, AI is anything that we think computers can do 3 years from now. Like, that's what AI is. There's no AI. It's just, well, like a good example of it. You know, 15 years ago, you'd say, yes, artificial intelligence is going to read the entire internet and be able to search it and bring it back. Well, and here we are now. Well, that's just search engine. It's not AI. That's search engine. You know, this stuff becomes products and things, and AI just kind of is that mirage right out there on the edge for all time.
But yeah, and it gets yeah, speak like it. You know, if you're going to have a podcast, you got to learn to talk. Yes, they glom onto it, right? Everything, it's like the when everything was client server or when everything became cloud or, you know, everything was mobile, native mobile or whatever.
Yeah, no, it's a flavor of the week.
All right, John. Well, hey, listen, thanks for coming back. Come back more often if you could. And listen, I have a pretty good idea of how much work this kind of a book is. And so thanks for writing a great book and for doing something very cool that sort of connects to the podcast. And, you know, I think it's very innovative what you guys have done.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's always a pleasure to be on you. I'll come back anytime, that's for sure.
All right, John. Stay legendary, my friend. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with John as much as I do, and I hope we can get him back soon. Now, to drive growth in your business, you got to know your customers. And that's where NetSuite's CRM offerings come in. They generate a powerful single view of the customer across all channels for complete visibility into online, in-store, call center transactions and interactions with customers. You can build rich customer profiles based on their behaviors and your interactions with them that can be made available to people across your enterprise, sales, marketing, and support, by way of example. You can create targeted segments for highly personalized, focused campaigns for upsell and cross-sell, as well as for customer support. You can, by integrating CRM and financials, you can truly understand the lifetime value of a customer, reduce service cost, improve satisfaction and retention, while providing a consistent cross-channel customer service experience. With NetSuite, you get all-in-one cloud business platform, from finance to inventory to orders to, yes, even CRM. And as a listener to this podcast, or should I say oddcast, NetSuite is offering you a free one-hour growth review with an expert in your industry. So go to netsuite.com/different to schedule your growth review today. And with NetSuite, you're going to know your customers like never before. And when you know your customers, you'll be able to grow. So don't forget to join us for our next episode on legendary marketing with none other than Sangram Bajuri, the entrepreneur and host of the Flip Your Funnel podcast. If you want to find us, we're lockhead.com, LOCHHEAD. While you're there, subscribe to our newsletter. We've been trying to take our newsletter game up. Frankly, I think we've got some awesome content. And I can promise you that A, we're only going to send you stuff we think is great, and B, we will never sell your email address to anybody. So you can subscribe on lockhead.com. If you want to email us, blackhole@lockhead, and on Twitter and Instagram, I'm @lockhead. All right. We would like to thank our guest and my buddy, John Wall, for being on the podcast. Don't forget to check out his fantastic new book, The Marketing Over Coffee Playbook. My friends at onelifefullylived.org, helping you dream, plan, and live your best life. Don't forget to join us October 12th and 13th in beautiful Long Beach, California, 2019, for our annual conference. Go to onelifefullylived.org/clockhead for more. And why not get back one of the most valuable things in the world, time?
with my friends at Bottleneck Virtual Assistants. Go to bottleneck.online to learn more today. Don't forget about Play Bigger, the instant classic from HarperCollins, written by myself and three really smart other guys. Check out Play Bigger wherever you get legendary books. Looking for a home in beautiful Santa Cruz, California? Then why not get in touch with my buddy Mike Block? Block Real Estate Team knows Santa Cruz forwards and backwards, one of the top real estate teams in the region. Check out MikeBlock.com today. And speaking of other things I love, how about Off the Lip Radio? This is Santa Cruz's favorite radio show. At least it's my favorite radio show in Santa Cruz, and a wildly popular podcast. Popular beyond imagination. With the amazing Neil Perlberg and Terry Campion, or Campion, whatever your religious beliefs. Check out Off the Lip Radio wherever you get legendary podcasts, or offtheliparadio.com. And the amazing folks at Habitat for Humanity. Their vision is of a world where everyone has a decent place to live. Check out habitat.org today. Now, I need to remind you that this oddcast is the sole property of the Lockhead Oddcast Network. All rights do remain perturbed. We must warn you that this oddcast is clearly created in a studio that does contain nuts. This episode was produced by the legendary Jamie J, edited by Sarah Parrish and Mike D, show notes by Roanne Nostros, newsletter and email by Christine and Karen Onahog. Now remember to teach kids marketing, buy John's crazy socks, don't forget, always shower with a friend, save water. Love you, Candy Dandy, and love you, Mom and Dad, and I love you too, Colin. And Colin, this oddcast really ties the room together, doesn't it? Today, our deepest apologies go to Gary Vaynerchuk. Sorry, Gare, we just ran out of time for you. Thank you so much for investing part of your life with me. It really it means a ton that you hang out. Stay legendary until we're together again. Follow your different.